The 12th, 1995. Greetings, Commander.
Good afternoon, Commander in Light, in service. And we have a lot of things to cover. I'm very, very pleased to see that we have some old friends with us, some new ones, and that Gene is here. Things are beginning to go a little bit better for us on the legal front. And along the way, we're making quite a few enemies. We're getting some feedback. Turn the volume down, EJ, or something. Are we okay now?
Yeah.
I think rather than ask for an update, we'll just let it ride for right now. Except where John Schrafer is concerned. We're going to need to keep pushing on that string until something gets done, and maybe a little bit later today, this morning, this afternoon. Good grief. You've got clocks and time to deal with. I think that you've made a wise decision to allow John to be in an apartment where he can be cared for. I can give Patricia quite a lot of support. She'll be basically checking in on him, as will Audrey. I am going to be right here, right now, saying that John is really borderline not capable of being in that apartment. And I'm going to let John ponder on this for a little bit. John has had some very, very bad experiences. What we want to refer to as an accident, number one, was no accident. And he is going to have to look at that. And he's going to have to be able to finally put his life back together. Since that time, his vision has not been very good. So he will be needing some adjustment to his eyeglasses, but let's not be adjusting too much until we get to the point where we get him back into what I'm going to call the adult state. This is not an insult to John. It is proof and confirmation that the mind has a way of handling its pain, its assault. And this has been coming on for quite a while as John tried to work his way through the most adverse circumstances that he ever was confronted with. You're going to have to understand that it's just not the Gunther Rusbachers of the world. It's not just the Kathy O'Briens of the world that will splinter off their personalities. It doesn't mean that you are dealing with massive personalities in a disordered sort of way, but the mind will be stunned and it will revert to whatever is the most comfortable stance. And as you will all remember, John was incarcerated. So he came under the most assault in the open that anyone's going to experience. As his confusion mounted, you had a doctor that was working with a Alzheimer's center and people who wanted to park John somewhere and wanted to get all of his assets, so they got this doctor to declare him senile dementia, which is nothing. You don't even find a definition of it, but certainly not Alzheimer's. And then you deprive him of visitation. He is locked down and he is treated. And if you watch him walk, he walks exactly like the ones in the Alzheimer's Center. Now, how do you get him to stop doing that? Easy. And we'll do that in a minute. The mind will revert to its circumstances, and if you're being treated like a child, the body, the mind, will act like one. But it means that the person involved with these aspects must also want to do something for themselves and must assume the responsibility of bringing back that adult. So we're going to talk about a few of these things before we have any demonstration in a little while. But let us just use an example of how easy it is to influence people. And it will give you an idea of how easy it's been to brainwash the United States of America right through your globe. There are some things I feel that you're going to move into cross-examination now by Effley Bailey of Mark Thurman. That should be interesting for all of you. Mr. Bailey trained with Gil Boyne. Mr. Bailey can put himself into a trance and he never misses anything, not a breath. He can mesmerize Mr. Furman right in front of him. And all he wants is for Mr. Furman to tell the truth. Well, the truth is going to be very interesting. You're going to find that Mark Furman didn't have to toss any glove over the fence. Whoever the footsteps belong to that Lopez heard, the murders had already been committed and the glove went over the fence. From her side, she would be dead today if they had known she was there. The plans were set up, orchestrated. They knew that Salinger's, her boss, her neighbor, the neighbor to Simpson, would be away. It was her day off. She shouldn't have even been there. All of these things, it seemed impossible for them to have structured. You have to understand, they were ready, and the minute the different pieces of the puzzle began to come together, then they took action. Some were caught happenstance, but don't count on very much of it being happenstance. Nicole's mother's eyeglasses falling are about the only real accident in the entire thing. A lot of pressure had to be put on O.J. Simpson, you see. He was not supposed to come home, as a matter of fact. There was a recital for his daughter that he needed to be at. But he was back east. He needed to go to Chicago. And everybody knew it would be wiser and better for him to go directly. Well, this was really going to blow the plans out of the water. Two things were happening. There had come a settlement in OJ's mind and Nicole's that they were going to go their separate ways. And she had had one living with her prior to that that had to be admitted for intervention for crack cocaine. But as each entity became more and more stable in their separate relationship, the opportunity was going to pass very rapidly to involve O.J. Simpson at all. So the big issue then became a big guilt trip on him not to miss Sidney's recital. So, worn out from the trips, a flare-up of arthritis, he decided to, because of his child, and those kids have gone through enough, he decided to come back to L.A. Now, you're going to find that Mark Furman has all of his bases covered. He doesn't have any of his bases covered. They've laid a schematic so that it appears that he's got all of his bases covered. I mean, he was at a police seminar type of gathering, and they were planning to have a barbecue for the evening. But he left, and he made a big deal of saying he left before the barbecue. He didn't even stay to eat. Where did you go? Went back home. Well, we know that home is not very far, because he managed to get up at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, and within 45 minutes was at the site, having gotten up out of bed, out of sleep, dressed, gone to the police department, picked up a car with his partner, and was on the scene. Where was he between 8 and 2 o'clock in the morning? That's one. And don't you just know that Mr. Simpson would be carrying around a shovel that isn't even fit for digging to bury his body? Any of you men in this room think you can dig a grave with a flat shovel? But obviously that's what he had in mind, because he had a plastic sack in there for the body. And they think they left everybody hanging on the edge of the cliff. Mr. Bailey's right. Any attorney that wouldn't be eager to get in there for this cross-examination ain't worth his weight in anything. No, this is planned. But it isn't even planned to take out O.J. Simpson. My God, watch what they're doing. CNN running it full time overseas. That's all they're getting from CNN during the daytime when that trial is on. That's all you're getting from CNN. And then Larry King wraps it up. Enjoy it. Watch it. It's worth it. But the reason I'm talking about this is because I want you to watch Effley Bailey. And then I want Gene to consider very seriously one of these next training programs by Gil Boyne. I'd like you there. He's a master teacher. He trained Bo Greitz. He trained Stallone. Although he will be the first to tell you that it was a shame. He built up Stallone's self-esteem and self-confidence, but there was no way to teach him to act. I believe he worked with Dolly Parton. No way to teach her to act or sing. Poor little child is a monarch. Right out of Hillbilly Land. So all of these things that go on, various ones are now bringing you all these connections, all of these answers. And what you can sort out from all of the actions of all mankind is the mind. It can make you sick. It can make you well. It will latch in to whatever is a comfort zone so you can survive and make it through. So everybody has multiple personalities. We call them aspects. When you go into meditation and you make connection with God or Maharaji or anyone, what are you doing? You are making mental connection. Well, you can make all of those mental connections with the dark side a lot easier, because they're there first. You've got to ask. You've got to ask for the lighted forces to show up. Because you're on a free will planet. But the call compels the answer. And when there is genuine request for assistance, you're going to get it. But most of you won't wait long enough for it to happen because you already have it cemented in your mind how you think it should happen. And meanwhile, life goes on and you're making all these plans and nothing happens. That is not true. You just don't know what is happening. Everybody assumed that old Gunther Rusbacher did everybody in. Gunther Rusbacher has done exactly what I needed him to do. But it's not very good for him. And we're going to have to take up that subject today because people's lives are in danger by the antics of our little dark energies. I resent far worse than do you having to devote paper space, time, and energy to this. But we can one more time devote a lot of energy to it, and it's over. No more big deal energy going into it unless we see out there somewhere that needs to be repeated. And then you can mail a copy of Tuesday's paper. It is time that you stop allowing and rebut these things. You've gone now enough years, you don't have to rebut them on the basis of some invisible space energy. Drop it. You're working with the hosts of God. And there is a big honking difference. And you've been lied to since the inception, the beginning of your illusion. So you struggle through your lives, making the children forget their truth while you train them into your lie. But you've got to take a stand and you've got to quit saying, oh, well, I'll just turn the other cheek. No. It's time now. You've got documentation. You've got confirmation. Start running it in the paper and start rebutting these things. It's gotten big enough now, this CIA garbage. The ones out there saying you're hooked up with the CIA and you get all this funding from the dark side and the black budget, BS. This paper has stayed in business because you guys have done it. And people out there care enough to barely keep it alive. What an insult. And the biggest insult is that you don't counter it at all. You've got to know your enemy, and you've got to know how clever is your enemy. And how easily mankind is just swished around. The only way that I know to really handle this last Edie Koenig, Dr. Koenig, who is a Bible thumper, and we therefore are evil because Ray Ellen told her so. Ray Ellen dress up in costumes and belongs to some secret orders that I don't think you want to hear about. And proud of it. But she will tell you I work for the white light. BS. All you have to do is once again not judge the person, judge the actions. And right now, because of this article, I think it unforgivable, except that being nice guys, you gotta forgive, right? Unconditionally, she's going to get Gunther if he is not killed. We already have word back, and this is confirmed, and I believe Rick wants to get up and shout hallelujah or something so that you all know that it's confirmed. they're going to sock a lot more charges against him to keep him parked. And the man needs some surgery. But even that's a lie. He needs some care. That's not a lie. And I think the best way to do this is to have somebody read, and I'll just comment as we go along. But before I do, I want to take up two or three questions that we just never get to answering. One precious person has asked and said, there's a part of one of the Pleiades connection series that she's just read and read and read and read and cannot make heads nor tails of it, but she's written to me. Well, I didn't write it. Germaine did, and I won't be able to explain it like Germaine, but I can tell you what it means. Quote, God never allows more than half of nine, N-I-N-E, for any action of man or nature. That one half of nine belongs to creation. The other half of nine belongs to God. That one half is the limit of man's or nature's free will, or for man's and nature's bodies to mature to their maximum. And I can answer it in one sentence. The sum of the parts are not equal to the whole. Nine is the number of God. 10 is the whole. But you don't have 10. You start at 0, you come back around to 0, from 9 to 0. And then you have the whole. So the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And you must, in the duality of life, you must always act within the laws of the creation, because they are the universal physical laws, physics. There are some things that just cannot be because it's not possible. They're against the laws of the universe, cosmic law. God will always have the bigger portion because you are a fragment of God. And you combine this, you have a whole, which will add up in your mental state as being 10. But 9 is your last number. So where you have this kind of an equation, it isn't going to make logical sense to you on this place. And, of course, that had a lot to do with light and the variances and speeds of things that you perceive. You see, you perceive that you move. No, you don't move. You have the perception of motion, but actually waves and pulses go up and down, piston. So perceptions change. The rapidity of particulate movement may very well change in your perception. And things occur which allow you again to perceive motion because of the sequence of events. And of course, all of you can grab your clock and time it. So once again, it all boils back down into the substance of mind and thought. That's all you are, the thought of God manifest. And all of you get onto this plane of experience and you get tampered with through the very purity of the mind itself. So it's complicated, but that's basically what that means. Now, someone else has asked about symptoms that you would experience when you're zapped with the pulses. And the second question would be, can a person in another area other than here, because her reference was to actually Dorma and Ed Young, but could other people be absolutely singled out for this kind of an attack? And the answer is absolutely. Anybody can. It will affect everybody differently. And unless you are out there, you know, leading the march, you're not going, they're not going to bother with you. They're going to zap everybody, so don't fret about it. Oh, this other is from Pierre. I think I won't take it up. Here is a beautiful letter from, you see, Terry Gross can't quite break away. Even though we began to wrap up other situations, he's written that he has sent down information regarding a review of a book chronicling the history of spiritualism in this country and some of the persons involved over the years. I thought it might be of interest to you, he says. In particular, the statement on the second page that Madame Blavatsky was accused of plagiarism when a transcription of hers from a spirit contained a passage identical to that from a speech of another medium. Let's see if we can fix that. And here it is. The book is called Madame Blavatsky's Baboon. It's sort of a funny takeoff on Darwin's theory of evolution. But I want to tell you this is amusing, and all of you should. Well, maybe we'll just run this in next week's paper because it's so much fun. It's going to pull in Krishnamurti and a lot of your so-called religious gurus. They're all, you know, presented by the Theosophical Society, and it's all BS. It makes it very hard, though, very, very difficult for me to try to communicate in this manner and then knock somebody else, isn't it? So you have to study the circumstances. All right. Who wants to do the honor of reading this? Brent, you, whoever. This is extremely important that, and I will interrupt at random, probably from the first sentence. Let me just say, in the first two paragraphs, it's almost all 100% BS.
The Russbacher Saga, update number 5, by Dr. Edie Koenig, DSC, NMD, BS, no.
Well, it's actually written by Ray Ellen Russbacher.
March 1995 issue, The American's Bulletin. After 5 years, the most visible political prisoner of the George Bush administration, Gunther Russbacher's 21-year sentence was reversed and he was released from prison. His 5-year ordeal was fraught with attempts on his life, beatings, withholding desperately needed heart medication, and torturous work assignments.
I'm not going to be able to stand it.
He also saw his wife and sons intimidated, threatened, beaten, arrested, and attempts made to kidnap and murder them. All of this occurred because Russbacher was brave enough to try to tell the truth and wake up the American people.
Padre, would you like to come up here with me? I think I'm serious, because I'm going to ask you a few questions in a minute. I guess you can stay there, but feel free to speak up. Did you get to do all the talking?
Oh, we call it Koenig. Quack, quack.
Yeah.
That fits me real good. Quack, quack,
quack.
We're getting you a chair.
Yes, please, get him a chair. He needs to sit down. Do you want me to share this? Is that what you're saying?
Give him his own.
You'll be able to reach it.
I'm just going to talk at your chest.
The problem with that is it's, yes.
What the priest always agrees.
not only were called Keeney Quack Quack, but we were called Ruschbacher Goosebacher. That has great esoteric meaning.
Shall I continue?
Yes, if you think you can.
Okay. What deep, dark secrets and the fear of their exposure caused such fear for George Bush and his regime that they would try anything to silence Gunther Rusbacher? Was it the October surprise? The treasonous agreement made with Iran that deprived 52 Americans of their freedom for an added 72 days? Was it the Iran-Contra weapons for hostages and money? Was it the diversion of that money to buy weapons for the Contras in Nicaragua? Was it the drugs that came back on some of those planes that had shipped weapons? Was it more drugs from Panama, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, and other Central and South American points of shipment, which were flown into Homestead Air Force Base in Florida aboard United States government planes? Was it the arms for drugs for money operation that was run out of a small airport in Mena, Arkansas? Was it the drugs that were shipped via shrimp boats into the Gulf of Mexico and then offloaded onto the oil platforms of Zapata Oil, a company started by George Bush? Was it the CIA involvement in the savings and loan scandal? What caused so much fear and agitation for George Bush during his re-election battle against Bill Clinton that he actually rambled incoherently about an SR-71 that never flew him back from his secret Paris meeting, which never took place? To illustrate this point, let me quote verbatim from the New York Times National Edition of June 5, 1992. On June 4, 1992, during a press conference, reporters were questioning Bush about his policies towards Saddam Hussein before the Gulf War. One reporter stated that it looked like a special prosecutor was going to be appointed to investigate. Bush responded, "I wonder whether they're going to use the same prosecutors that are trying out there to see whether I was in Paris in 1980 and flew home in an SR-71 Blackbird. I mean, where are we going with the taxpayers' money in this political year? So, let them look at it. It's no problem to me. I think at some point somebody ought to say, where is all this money going that goes to pay for these special prosecutors rummaging through files and proving nothing? I was not in Paris. And we did nothing illegal or wrong here. We tried, and it didn't work, and we moved, and that's the answer to it."
Now, whether you like it or don't like it, they did nothing illegal. They may have done everything unconstitutionally, but they did nothing illegal. He was not in Paris. He was in the suburbs. That's like saying you didn't go to Lancaster, but you did go to Palmdale. So let's get this straight. Ray Ellen has managed to write all this down here, a lot of things that are relative to a lot of other things in the cover-up. But it wasn't Rusbacher. She's going to talk in a minute about the Federal Reserve as if Rusbacher is the first one to have ever spewed the beans out there. Well, he's going to have to get a long way behind in line. The first really, really good write-up was done by Eustace Mullins, and it's never been topped. Anthony Sutton did some really good stuff on the Federal Reserve. What Gunther did do was run some very illegal operations, business operations, and a lot of people lost a lot of money. It was a typical CIA, ONI government scam. George Bush was a member of the CIA. Remember, he headed it. There are many factions in the CIA, and they may very well contribute to the turnaround of your country. And there's a lot of truth about the status or the family status of one Gunther Rusbacher. But the way it is presented, you're going to be able to tell, one, that the adversarial troops are at each other, and two, that there are some truths, but if he cannot be restored, it may as well be the lie and is lost to him. because the thrust will be to return the monarchy, that type of leadership, in an effort to turn around the systems. Well, which is worse? Actually, I think that what you have happening now is worse. But that doesn't mean that the other alternative is good. So go on, please.
Gunther Rusbacher was the only Bush accuser who had said anything about Bush being flown home in an SR-71 spy plane. Rusbacher clearly states that he was the pilot who flew George Bush and many others to the secret meeting.
Wait. Number one lie. Gunther Rusbacher may have been aboard the plane. I'm not even going to get into it. He did not fly it. He did not fly them there. And it was not an SR-71 that flew them there under any circumstances. So just that one's wrong. Go on.
Bush was technically correct. The meeting was not held in Paris, but in a suburb of Paris. Rusbacher also states he flew the vice presidential candidate home from France. The flight took only 1 hour and 45 minutes aboard a two-seater SR-71. While others had implicated Bush in the treasonous October surprise deal, no one except Gunther Rusbacher had mentioned an SR-71.
Right. Now let me mention something. Also in this rambling story that she usually tells about how they met, etc., and how they dashed away romantically to get married, they took what is called a little blackbird, which is a modified, whatever you want to call it, plane used by the head of the CIA. It was called Casey's Little Blackbird. Now, I just want to run a few things by you that usually is in her story. One, they decide to go off in this romantic interlude and they take Casey's Blackbird. But here you've got an SR-71 pilot, ? He didn't fly the plane. Why didn't he fly this little cute deal? He was third highest, right under Casey, two down from Casey, head of the CIA. And he loves to fly. I mean, he lands upside down with a tail dragging on the runway, he says, scaring everybody to death, just almost scared Chuck Rader, Admiral Chuck Rader, to death. Only the person he was calling Chuck Rader is one of our readers, and he doesn't know how to fly. Now let's just talk about credibility here. There is a tape. A videotape of George Bush in that cockpit with a pilot. But it sure has disappeared. Now maybe Gunther knows where there is a copy. One copy supposedly went to Wiltshire, who got deaded, suicided, you know. So a lot of people seem to know a lot of things, and a lot of people don't know anything. So let's just make up a story. I don't like made-up stories. Now, we are married, and we are going somewhere else, and we're still in this Blackbird. Him and Ray Ellen drinking, and now they're married, and they're in love, and all of this stuff. And you've got one of the most technical pieces of machinery around, and the radio didn't work from the cockpit to the seat. Now, the next story is they went to Reno. Everybody get it in mind where Reno is, up by Lake Tahoe. But they scrambled planes to track them from Nellis, which is all the way south in Las Vegas. Hard to believe, isn't it? Somebody has their story twisted. Does that mean that the concept is wrong? Well, in this instance, yes, but let's let that go. When queried about this, oh, well, I wondered about that too, Ray Ellen said. Why would they send someone from Nellis? But that's what happened. No, it's not what happened. But I'm not here to explain to anybody about what did happen. It's her story. Let her have it. Go on, please.
Rusbacher was a prisoner in Jefferson City, Missouri, at the time Bush made the above statement. Rusbacher had tried to meet with Ross Perot and provide him with the details of this flight, but he suddenly had a heart attack. Rusbacher was taken to a hospital and placed under heavy guard. Immediately upon his release from the hospital, he was taken back to prison, where he was attacked and beaten by three guards wielding nightsticks. Three bones in his leg and foot were broken, and he received concussion. After the beating, he was thrown into solitary confinement. Only an appeal made by his wife, Ray Ellen.
Oh! That's right, single-handedly.
Only an appeal made by his great wife, Ray Ellen, to Kurt Waldheim, the president of Austria, succeeded in getting Rusbacher released from the black hole. Why did Kurt Waldheim get involved? This question opens up the deeply hidden side of this deep-cover naval officer who has worked for over 30 years as a CIA field operative. To answer the...
So far, Edie's doing really good, don't you think, Padre?
Real good.
To answer the question in a simple way, Kurt Waldheim is Gunther Rusbacher's godfather. Rusbacher's father, Karl, was an officer in Das Reich during World War II, attached to the Abwehr, the German equivalent to the CIA, an organization that was headed by Wilhelm Canaris. Canaris is best known for his attempt to assassinate Adolf Hitler, end the war, and restore rightful rule to Germany and Austria. Rusbacher's uncle was Waldheim's commanding officer. Upon the deaths of both Rusbacher's father and his original godfather, Ernst Kaltenbrunner, the head of Austrian intelligence and one of the early founders of Interpol, Waldheim stepped in to offer his help and guidance in the raising of young Gunther. Waldheim played a pivotal role in the early life of Rusbacher. This role continued even after Rusbacher and his mother, the Archduchess of Hungary, Elizabeth Wiese von Esterházy, were exiled to the United States. Many members of the German, Austrian, Hungarian, Italian, and other royal families were sent into exile after the war, and herein lies the secret that George Bush feared most. The treason involved in October Surprise could have caused him to be investigated by the Democratic-controlled Congress.
Yeah, that's terrifying, isn't it? Don't you notice how they quiver and shake?
And if found guilty, impeached. But Bush didn't fear this because there were just as many Democrats as Republicans involved in the deal. Bush was confident that he would never be accused of treason, much less impeached. The drugs for guns involved many Democrats also, including Bill Clinton and many of his friends. The same can be said for the savings and loan scandal. If Democrats tried to indict any friends or family of George, they would also be implicating many Democratic congressmen and women. Bush knew he was safe from any real threat of exposure for the crimes and treason he and his friends and family have engaged in for the last 40 or more years. If George Bush did not fear Gunther Rusbacher because of his attempts to expose Bush's involvement in treason, corruption, and murder, then what could Rusbacher know that Bush was so afraid he would tell?
I'm going to pause and turn the